Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding as well as we talk about the history of bodybuilding. And on today's episode, we are going to have one of my favorite guests, Jerry Branum. He is back again, and this is part three of our interview where we went back in time. 2 weeks ago, we talked about 1968. We went back 50 years to talk about the major events in bodybuilding in 1968. And last week, we had part two of our interview with Jerry, where we talked about the major events in bodybuilding in 1978. And today, we are continuing that discussion, and this will be our last conversation with Jerry for this part of the interview, where we talk about 1988. And we're going to talk about the major events that happened 30 years ago. 1988 was already 30 years ago. And on our interview today with Jerry, we're going to talk about, of course, the 1988 Mr. Olympia, which was one of my favorite Mr. Olympias. It was Lee Haney's fifth win. We're going to talk also about what made Haney so dominant in the 1980s. We got into a discussion about Lee Labrada and how Jerry thought that he should have won the 1990 Mr. Olympia, the one that was drug tested. We talk a little bit about Bob Paris and what made him such a special bodybuilder. And we also talk about Phil Williams winning the 1988 Chicago Pro Show. And then Jerry gives his opinion on who he thinks would have won if it was Arnold at his best versus Lee Haney at his best. So we're going to have a really interesting and entertaining conversation with Jerry Branum coming up in a minute. And I want to mention that we are brought to you by Old School Labs. Now, I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is a supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. I'm talking no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors or sweeteners. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is the world's first two-stage pre-workout. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe title back in 2012. They're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the 2017 and 2018 Classic Physique Olympia champion, and also the 2018 Classic Physique Arnold Classic champion. They also sponsor 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 when you go to oldschoollabs.com and you will receive 12% off your order. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. And as I said last week, Old School Labs has really added a lot of supplements to their collection. So go check them out when you go to oldschoollabs.com. I've been taking their collagen, which is really good for your joints. And of course, I take their protein powder, Vintage Brawn, which is made with milk, eggs, and beef. It's not just a fast-acting whey protein. So check all that out. All right, what else is going on in the world of bodybuilding? We got a lot of emails, which I'm going to read in a second. But we did have some bad news. We had another unfortunate passing in the world of bodybuilding. Paul Winter, who was one of the dominant bodybuilders in the 1950s and 60s in the NABBA universe. In fact, if you may remember, we did a series of interviews with Wayne Galash about the history of the NABBA universe, and we talked about all the big winners from the past 30 years in the NABBA universe, and Paul Winter's name came up. He was a really, really good bodybuilder, very thick, but also great aesthetic shape. He kind of reminded me of a younger Serge Noubre before Serge Noubre got really, really shredded. So anyways, Paul died on January 9th, so about 10 days ago or so, and he was 83 years old. He was born in Antigua and in the Caribbean, but he lived in the United Kingdom for many, many years. I'm reading this off of Cy Sweeney's column posting, I should say, in Facebook. And Cy said that Paul competed in 9 NABBA Universe contests between 1956 and 1983. He won the NABBA Professional Mr. Universe in 1960 and 1966. In 1966, that was the first year that Arnold went in it, when Arnold took second to Chet Yorton in the amateurs. So that's why I remember Paul's name, because I remember Paul won the pro division that year. He also won 2 amateur Mr. Universe class titles in 1956 and 1958. He won the NABBA Professional Short Class in 1959, and he lost out to the overall to Bruce Randall. He also won the 1965 NABBA Professional Short Class, and he lost the overall to Reg Park. So rest in peace, Paul Winter. He was a great bodybuilder, and he lived a long life, like Ed Corney. He lived till 83 years old. But he was a great bodybuilder, and he should be remembered. And I should mention at the end of this broadcast, I am going to read another article. This was from an old Muscle Builder magazine from 1973. This was actually a contest report. So after we get done with our interview with Jerry Branham, stay tuned to the show, because I'm going to read this article. It's not very long, but I got a lot of great feedback from that article I read about Ed Corney when we did our Ed Corney tribute 2 weeks ago. So I'm going to start adding that to the show. Every couple weeks or so, every 2 or 3 weeks, I'll read an article from an old Muscle Builder or an old magazine that I have that I think would be relevant to the show that you guys would like. So we're going to read another one this week, and it's kind of going to be a short one, but I also have another one next week about Frank Zane that I think you guys will find really interesting. All right, so what else is going on? I am back in the consultation business now, because we are in January and everybody is getting serious about their diet. My old friend Tony Bamonte came back to me, and he actually did a contest about a year and a half ago, and then sort of got off the wagon, I should say, you know, and started eating again. And now he's back getting serious. So I'm proud to say that Tony's first week back on his training and diet program, he lost 11 pounds in 1 week, and he actually lost 1.5 inches off his waist in 1 week. So that's really great. So if you guys are interested in having me help you out with a training or diet program, if you're ready to make some changes to your body, you can always contact me at my website, which is dadbodtoripbod.com, and that's dadbod2ripbod.com. Or you can just contact me by email, which is naturalolympia@gmail.com. And my training is going really good. I'm using my MP6 workout program. I just finished week number 5 of my power program. So right now my weight is up about 15 pounds. I was 195 for my last photo shoot. I'm about 210 right now. And my waist has gone up 2 inches, which is good. I'm still lean, but I'm not super lean. Of course, you can't stay that lean. You know, you can't stay photo shoot lean all the time. Otherwise, your training will suffer, because you just won't have your energy, or you won't be able to build muscle mass. But the really interesting thing, and the reason why I kind of did this reverse dieting, was I wanted to increase my metabolism, and I didn't want to get too fat, because I wanted to keep my metabolism going faster. And I'm proud to say that it's really working. It's been about probably close to 2 months now. I think I did my last photo shoot on December 5th. So it's been close to 2 months now since my last photo shoot. So I think for my photo shoot, when I was dieting, I was eating around 2,300 calories, which is really low. And I was really suffering. I remember I was like really depleted and just brain dead. And I just felt tired a lot when I was dieting. So I just thought I had to go that low because I'm older and I'm in my 50s. But now I am eating around 3,500 calories, and that seems to be about my maintenance, which is great news, because I would think if I lowered it just a little bit, maybe to around 3,000, I should be able to get leaner and get ripped, as long as I can keep my metabolism going. Now, I was eating 3,000 calories when I was dieting for my first Natural Universe contest, which was in 1992 when I was only 29 years old. So if I can get my metabolism going fast again like it was when I was in my 20s or 30s, that's a major success. So I'll keep you guys posted on how that goes. I'm still in the off season. I'm going to be in the off season for a few more months for sure, because I wasn't planning on competing or doing a photo shoot or getting ripped again until August. So I would probably start my diet probably 10 or 12 weeks before that. So, but yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited about my training. My training's going good. Obviously, I was weak after my photo shoot, so my strength is going up each week now. So I'm really loving my training, and I like the way I look still because I'm still lean, but I'm fuller and I'm still vascular. So yeah, things are going good. I really like this reverse dieting. I'm really glad I did it, and it's really working out well for me. All right, let's get to the emails. We got quite a few emails. I am putting some of my podcasts now on video. So if you go to my YouTube channel, which is under my name, John Hansen, you'll see that I have quite a few new videos up from the podcast. So here are some of the emails I got. This was on Facebook about this week's episode with, or last week's episode, I should say, with Jerry Branum, which was part two where we talked about 1978. Terry Strand said, get Bob Paris on your show via Skype or whatever. His story and experience with Rory Liedemeyer is very telling, as well as his whole autobiography, Gorilla Suit, which is must reading and totally entertaining for all Iron historians and fans. Have you read it? Yes, I have read it. And I have tried to get Bob Paris on the show, but he is not answering my emails. So I will keep trying. Richard Baldwin said, great interview. My good friend Jerry Branum is one of the smartest guys I know, and John Hansen's knowledge of the sport makes him the best interviewer on the bodybuilding world. Thank you, Richard. That was very nice to say. Pete Pingle said, part one was awesome, John. I can't wait to hear this. Sergio Moshia said, great interview, John. I love going back to the 70s. Shaddy Shadster said, funny story about Frank Zane's trophies. Jerry brings this woman into his apartment. She looks and reads the trophies, Mr. America, Mr. Universe. She tells them, are those your trophies? Jerry says, well, it's my apartment, isn't it? Awesome interview. Jerry has great memories from the golden era. All right. Thank you guys for those comments. I also got a lot of emails from you guys. Mike Testani said, I meant to contact you about your podcast tribute to Ed Corney. I loved it, especially when you read his article. What a great idea, and I definitely hope you'll continue to read old articles on a regular basis. I also think it would be awesome if you read competition reports like the Olympias from the Golden Days. All right, I'm going to do that, Mike. And Mike is from Canada. Mike also said, ironically, I was just listening to the latest podcast, and as Jerry Branum was talking about Cal Scalak winning the Mr. America, I look over and I realize the 1976 September-October issue of Muscular Development is literally sitting on my desk with Cal on the cover and the 1976 Mr. America contest covered inside, which he won. Ron Tufel second and Tom Platz second and third respectively in the short division. Tom was 20 years old, 5'7", 200 pounds. Dave Johns first in the medium division. Cal wins the overall. As Jerry stated, Cal had moved to California and lived in his homemade camper van for 8 months. In the same issue, Bertil Fox wins the NABBA Mr. Britain. All right. I remember that issue. I think I have that issue somewhere. Michael R. made a comment on YouTube, and he was talking about the video I made of Sergio Oliva should have won the 72 Olympia, which is what Jerry said. Michael said, I know that the judging standards and ideals were very different back in the early 70s, but Sergio never really did it for me. Sure, Arnold's conditioning doesn't compare to what we got in the future, but he had that perfect shape and proportions. Sergio just always seemed to have a bloat to me, almost like a D-ball bloat, or kind of a swollen looking. Smooth legs, lack of separation all over, even in his trademark arms. Arnold was just more pleasing to look at in general. Thanks for the great content, John. I have my phone set to automatically download your podcast whenever you upload a new one. I really enjoy these clips on YouTube, as the addition of the photos makes them even better. Thanks again, brother. Much respect from Halifax, Canada. All right, thank you. Umar Saeed said, Arnold was lucky. Oliva was disqualified in 71. He beat Oliva in 72. Zane should have won in 1980, if not for his accident when he lost 15 pounds of muscle. Zane's my favorite, but Arnold still is arguably the greatest. Guy Graham said, great interview, John. Jerry is one of my favorites in the industry, intelligent and honest. Bobby DeMarco said, oh my God, this was fantastic. We love you, John. Keep the old school alive. Congrats on the old school contract. I hope you have a wonderful year and a wonderful life. Wow, thank you, Bobby. And finally, Adam Alley said, hi, John. I love the show. I love the Olympia winner shows. And Brainerd was great. What a great idea it was to do the past 50, 40, and 30 years in review for a 2018 year-end show. That was genius. Oh, thank you. I thought of that myself. I was wondering if your diet and training programs are a one-time plan, or does it include weekly follow-ups, text, emails, you review photos, and alter the plan accordingly? I was just wondering. Thanks, John. You're an inspiration, and you put out extremely high-quality, serious content. Please keep it up. We are listening. All right. Thank you, Adam. To answer your question, when I do my consultations, the first month I design your diet and your training, and yes, I do follow up with you each week for the first month, and then I have monthly follow-up programs, which are obviously cheaper, but I follow up with you each week, and yeah, we do the photos, and I also have you do measurements to make sure that you're making progress. So it's not just a one-time deal where I give you the program and you're on your own. I do follow it with you all the time. So if you're interested, again, just contact me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. All right, guys, thank you for the emails and the comments. I really do appreciate them. And if you send them to me on Facebook or at my email address, naturalolympia@gmail, I will read them on the air if you so wish. And I always appreciate hearing your comments and what you guys want to hear. All right, before we get to our interview with Jerry for part three, where we talk about the 1988 year in review in bodybuilding, I want to also mention that we are brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. Their certified and knowledgeable staff will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, which is 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their brand new website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's FL for Florida, alternativemeds.com, or call them directly at 813-922-8939 and tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your first order. All right, so that is it for our opening. Here is our part three of our interview with Jerry Brainerd, where we talk about the year 1988 in bodybuilding. Here we go.
Well, Jerry, let's go to 1988, so we'll go 30 years back from where we're at now. And the Olympia that year, I think, was one of the best Olympias ever. 1988 Olympia, that was the one held in Los Angeles, and I think Lee Haney won his fifth Mr. Olympia. But I just thought it had one of the greatest lineups ever in Olympia history, and everybody was in top shape in that contest.
Yeah, that stands out for a number of reasons that I did attend that contest.
Oh, you did? Oh, great.
It was held in Los Angeles. I remember the pre-judging was at a hotel in Universal City.
Yeah.
You know, Universal City. They had a hotel there, and they did something that year that they never did before since. I'm not sure if you're aware of this.
The weigh-in, yeah.
The weigh-in. They had a weigh-in, which was amazing because, remember, all these guys, you know, the pros, and the magazines, they all exaggerated their weights.
Right.
I mean, nobody went around saying they weighed 275 like they do today. But,
right.
I mean, you know, guys would say they weigh like, you know, 225, 230, 240.
Yeah.
50, you know, and that kind of stuff. And Lonnie Tipo was the MC. I remember they had a scale set up on a stage. And all the guys, all the competitors went on the stage. I mean, went on the scale. Imagine, all these people were in the audience watching this.
Yeah.
Lonnie Tipo with a microphone would state with the weight, you know,
right.
In public state. I remember Gasparri getting on. Rich Gasparri was claiming to be 225.
Right.
And when he got on the scale, he was something like 205.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the heaviest guy, if I remember correctly, was Lee Haney. Lee Haney, I think, was maybe 238 or 240, or maybe even 243.
Yeah.
But he was by far the heaviest. Another guy whose weight was really up was Barry DeMay. Remember Barry DeMay?
Yeah, yes.
Great guy, great build. But he was claiming 220, and he was something like 205.
Wow.
And this one, Garrett, I think Gary Stridham.
Yeah, Gary Stridham was down in weight, too.
all the guys' weight that, you know, that they had claimed in the magazines was completely off.
Yeah.
Now a devil's advocate might stop at this point and say, wait a minute, Jerry, maybe the weights they said in the magazines when they're off season weight, when they got heavier,
yeah,
and make you know, that what you saw was their contest weight because they were going to compete in a contest in a couple of hours, you
right,
know?
Right.
But unfortunately, the problem with that is the weights that were stated in the magazines were supposed to be their contest
right,
weights.
Right.
So, you know, guys were like, I remember a couple of them, was it Lee Labrada? A couple of them, I remember when they announced the weight, they kind of made a face. You know, embarrassed that you know the truth is being revealed about their actual weights.
Right.
It was funny, hilarious. But the Brian Buchanan was there. I remember. You know, just about everybody. There was nobody in the whole lineup whose weight matched what they claimed. No, the only guy who came close was Lee Haney. He was the only one.
Yeah,
and he won. He won. You know, it was a terrific show with the
back. Wasn't it? I mean, yeah, it was a great show.
It was a great show. In fact, I'd say it's between that and I think a year later they held it in Rimini, Italy. Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Those two are by far my favorite Mr. Olympias because everything was great. I mean, the one in Rimini, Italy was this little town called Rimini. It looked like a giant movie set, John. It was a little small town.
Oh, really?
Right off the Adriatic Sea. I mean, you could just walk the whole town in about 15 minutes.
Wow.
Just beautiful, just a beautiful place. That was the contest where I remember interviewing Lee Labrada about his pre-contest diet, where Lee Labrada was another, and still is to this day, as you know, a very intelligent guy.
Yeah.
Has an engineering degree, very smart, great, great bodybuilder. I think he should have won the Mr. Olympia in 1990, but that's another story.
Right.
Perfect physique. But anyway, I was interviewing about his pre-contest dieting. He was very forthcoming throughout the whole interview. We were sitting right outside the hotel, I remember. And I said, Lee, for the readers, can you just give me a typical day's eating, like meal one, meal two? So the readers, this was for Joe's magazine, you know, Muscle and Fitness. So the readers could get an idea of exactly how you eat. So he says, okay, for breakfast I have, and then he says, wait a minute, hold on a second. I said, what's the matter? He says, no, I think I'm going to stop at this point, Jerry. I said, what's going on? He says, I don't want to give my exact diet. And I turned off the tape recorder and I said, I don't understand, Lee. Why don't you want to give your exact meal plan? He says, because it would give my competitors an edge. Exact words.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't want to argue. I said, okay, you know, Lee, I got enough information. And I shook his hands. I said, thanks a lot. But I kind of wondered about that. I said, I said to myself, would there be, let's say, one of Lee Labrada's main competitors, Lee Haney, let's say, would it be an advantage for Lee Haney to know that Lee Labrada ate three eggs instead of four?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying anything against Lee Labrada. I mean, he's a great, very intelligent guy, very successful, more power to him, you know.
Yeah,
he's got
a
great supplement company. You know, his brother, Gene, is a great guy also, you know. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was because Lee was dieting, you know. Yeah. Wasn't focusing. I think maybe he was focused on the contest.
Right.
And that, I have a funny feeling that if I got him at another time, he would have given me that information.
Right, you know? Right.
Just a question of the wrong time. So, nothing. It was nothing here nor there. It was just but I remember how pretty Rimini was. What a beautiful place that was.
Yeah.
But the LA Olympia was, if you look at the stage setting, you know, it's funny, at Gold's Gym, they have big screen there in the front, and they run constantly.
They show it, they show it all the time,
You ever see that?
Yeah.
They rerun 88 Mr. Olympia over and over again. So,
right.
And I see that, and I think, my God, I was at that show.
Yeah.
It brings back memories, you know?
Yeah. But the thing I loved about that show too, it seemed like everybody had really great posing routines. I can watch that tape over and over again.
Right, but did you notice how good the lighting was too?
Yeah, that's great.
And it had like that blue background.
Yeah,
and the lighting didn't drown out. Sometimes the contest lighting is bad.
Yeah,
and that makes the guys look smoother than they are. But this show, the lighting was done so well. I can't remember who set up the lighting. I'm not sure who it was. But the lighting was perfect, and it showed the guys at their maximum. It didn't drown out the definition.
Yeah.
Everything looked great. It was a great show. Very smoothly run.
Yeah.
Very good show.
What do you think of Lee Haney as Mr. Olympia? I mean, he sort of set a whole new standard, right, when he came along?
Oh, there's no question about it. Lee Haney, was it 84 the year he won
first? 84, yeah.
Yeah, he set a new standard because he had literally, almost a perfect physique.
Yeah.
I mean, some people criticize Lee. They say his arms weren't big enough, you know, or this and that. But the thing is, he had, again, I hate to keep harping back on that, but he had that head-to-toe body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was a great poser. Honestly, to me, he would just like, you know, do a pose and then put his arm down and move. He didn't flow. Like Lee Labrada was very flowing, artistic, almost like a ballet. Mm-hmm. You know, Lee was just I guess you'd call him a power poser.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that is that the 1990 Olympia was very controversial. A lot of people don't know this, but Lee Labrada actually won the pre-judging. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
That was held in Chicago. That was the only steroid or drug tested Mr. Olympia ever held.
Right.
It was held in Chicago in 1990. And I knew that Lee Labrada had won the pre-judging, right? After the contest, of course, history records that Lee Haney won the show.
Right.
And I remember asking the head judge, I said, I'm confused, I don't understand. I said, Lee Labrada won the pre-judging, and then Lee Haney wins the overall contest. I said, how do you explain that? And he says, Lee Haney had a better presentation. I said, I'm confused. What do you mean by that? I mean, you're talking about his physique? He says, yeah, his physique, of course, but he was a better poser. And I stopped, again, I turned off the tape recorder. I said, hold on. Are you looking me in the eye and telling me that you think Lee Haney was I love Lee. He's a great guy. I think he's a fantastic guy. Are you going to sit here and tell me that you think Lee Haney was a better poser than Lee Labrada? Are you going to say that? He says, that's the way the judges scored it. I always get a laugh at it because there's no comparison between Lee Labrada. Lee Labrada was an exceptional poser.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
As great a bodybuilder as he was, I don't think anybody in their right mind would call him a great. He was not a good pose. Great physique, but you know the reason why. Getting back to setting a new standard. One reason why Lee Haney did set a new standard in '84 was because his back development was tremendous. I mean, you know, the only I think comparable person who had a back like his prior to that. Samir Bonneau.
Okay.
When Samir Bonneau went, was it 82, I think?
83.
83. He had a perfect back, Samir. And then this Lee Haney comes along, and, you know, he looks great from the front, but when, you know, it was actually close, the contest. And, you know, see, when Lee Haney, you have to understand, when he competed in winning those, was it 8 Mr. Olympias?
Yeah.
You know, it was still a contest. In other words, it wasn't really a foregone conclusion until, let's say, the last 3 years of Lee Haney's reign. The first couple of years, it was like an open season. Anybody could have won.
Okay.
And my observations were that it was very close until they started doing back poses.
Yeah.
Lee's back was so full, his back was so wide, he had detail, kind of like Flex Wheeler showed later. And every inch of his back showed muscularity and detail to the extent that, I'm not saying the other guys' backs were bad, but Lee overshadowed them so badly that it was over. As soon as he turned to the back.
Yeah.
In fact, that goes so far as to say that the reason he beat Dorian Yates in 1991, which was his last year of competing, Dorian and him were very close throughout the contest, but when they turned to the back, Lee Haney's back was superior to Dorian's.
Hmm.
And Dorian Yates, think back, he was no slouch when it came to the back.
No, not at all.
Fantastic. But Lee Haney's back was so great that he edged out Dorian Yates that year in the 91.
Yeah.
Of course, Dorian's back got better. He got bigger and bigger. Dorian was relatively small in the 91 show.
Yeah.
As the years passed, I mean, Dorian told me right around that time, in fact, right that year, that same year, in an interview I did with him, Dorian said, I said, what are your plans? He says, I'm going to be the Mr. Olympia of the 90s. The 90s are going to be my era.
Hmm.
I said, what do you mean? He says, I'm going to win the title throughout. Remember, he hadn't even won the title yet.
Yeah.
He just lost the Lee Haney in second place.
Yeah.
I'm going to win the title. It's almost like what Arnold told me, you know?
Yeah.
He says, I'm going to win the title next year and for a couple of years after that, maybe 6 years, he goes.
Wow.
Talk about good prognostication.
Right.
And more power to him. If you look at the photos, he did improve every year.
Yeah.
That's why he quit when he got those injuries and he said he couldn't train 100. Now you can understand why, because the way Dorian Yates' mind worked, he had to show improvements every year. Although one year, was it 97? I can't remember. There was one year where I felt that he should have lost, and that was against Nasser El-Sambadi. Do you remember that year?
97, yeah.
He came in with some sort of bicep tear, Dorian. And he also, I was standing backstage, and I noticed, they were comparing him to Nasser. And the thing I noticed about Dorian is he had almost no leg bicep development. Nothing.
Wow.
And had this gigantic leg bicep. And Nasser from the front not only matched Dorian, but even looked bigger. Even his back came close to matching Dorian. But Dorian won.
Yeah.
You know, and the reason he won is related also to Lee Haney's successive wins. It's something that I call, and I've written this in the magazines, I call it the incumbent Olympia factor.
Right.
What this means is that a guy who's won the Mr. Olympia more than once, not once, but more than once, already has an edge. As soon as the curtain opens, as soon as they step on stage, he's standard to which all the other competitors are being compared. What that means in practical terms is if Mr. Olympia, the incumbent Mr. Olympia, is in good shape or even better shape than he was the year before, he wins.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is what happened this year to Phil Heath. Phil Heath did not look bad, but I didn't see any improvement. I saw a guy who still had a little bit of bloat in his stomach, right? Great body. Oh, my God. Just a fantastic bodybuilder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was the other guy, whose name escapes me at the moment, who's the current Olympian?
Sean Roden.
Sean Roden showed a lot of improvement. Sean Roden, the year before, had been off.
Yeah, he was.
And then he came back with an improved physique. So one of the other competitors showed significant improvement, whereas the incumbent Mr. Olympia, who was going for his, what was it? It was an eighth title, I think.
Yeah, it would have been eight. Yeah, he would have won. You know, he would have tied the record with Haney.
Everybody just thought it was a sure thing. Who was going to beat Phil Heath? And this guy, Sean Roden, comes in with significant improvement, looking the best he's ever looked in his life, beats Phil Heath.
Yeah.
That was the, this is my point, is this is the exception to the rule. And, you know, with Lee Haney, it only happened once. And he still beat him. That was the 90 contest where Lee Labrada should have won.
Yeah.
Honestly, he won the prejudging. That thing about him losing because of posing was absolutely absurd. Anyone would agree with me on that.
Yeah.
Lee Labrada should have won the 90 show because Lee Haney was off. Was he off because it was drug tested? And maybe he had to get off the drugs? I don't know. That's speculation.
Right.
I can tell you this, though. The 90 show, all the guys were a little bit off, except for Lee Labrada. All the guys were off, and so much so that when I spoke to Wayne D'Amelio after the show, you know, remember Wayne D'Amelio was the honcho, was the head of the IMP Pro Division at that time.
Right.
I said, Wayne, so this is going to be a regular thing, right, the drug testing? He said, Jerry, this is off the record. So I had to turn off my tape recorder. I said, what's going on, Wayne? He says, no, this is it. We're not going to drug test anymore. I said, what? I said, you make a big deal about drug testing. And
right.
We're all happy because now we're going to get in the Olympics and all this stuff.
Right.
And now you're going to get rid of it? He says, Jerry, did you see the guys? You see how off they were? I said, well, yeah. I mean, a lot of the guys didn't look as good as they usually do. He says, the bodybuilding fans come to see freaks. He says, you know, not guys that are just in shape. They want to see freaks.
Right.
And if you drug test them, the freaky look is gone.
Right.
So no more drug testing. That's a true story. Never appeared in the magazines. But right. Now you know why there was only one drug test in Mr. Olympia.
Right, right.
But Lee Haney always showed I tell you a funny story about Lee Haney. In 1987, at the 87 show, which was held in Gothenburg, Sweden. You remember that show?
Right, yep.
I happened to be put in a hotel away from everybody. And I said, well, where'd they stick me in this hotel? Maybe I might. But I didn't realize there was one other person who was also in the hotel, Lee Haney.
Really?
All the other bodybuilders were staying at one hotel. Lee Haney was at another. And I happened to be in the same hotel. So I met up with Lee Haney and his training partner. And we all had breakfast. This is the day before the contest in Sweden. And Lee's sitting there, and he said, Jerry, I'm going to head to the gym and I'm going to go in the tanning machine. He goes, I said, you're not going to train? He says, no. He says, I'm just going to go in the tanning machine. Right? So I said, do you mind if I take a ride with you? Because I'm going to maybe get a little work at it. Sure, come on. So we go there. And I remember when we walked in this gym in Sweden, this small bodybuilding gym in Sweden, everybody, all the guys were there, all the competitors, right? Well, you know, this is the day before the show, and the first thought I had was, why are these guys training the day before the show?
It's already done.
Do they think they're going to make gains or something?
And
Lee had no intention of training. He was, ready for the tanning booth. And the thing I'll always remember that was funny about it, it was like a scene out of a movie. As soon as Lee Haney walked in the gym, everybody, there was total silence. Everybody stopped what they were doing and stared. All of Lee LeBron, everybody just stared at Lee Haney. And he says, hi, guys, how you doing? And he passed them into whatever the tanning room was.
Right.
And then they came in straight in. It was hilarious. It was just funny how, the king walks in. Already won the Mr. Olympia company. He was the king of bodybuilding.
Right.
It was like they were paying deference to the king.
Right.
The king.
Right.
I wish I had a video. That would have been hilarious.
Yeah. Now you saw Arnold at his best and you saw Haney at his best. Who do you think was better?
Oh, that's a tough question.
It would have been close, right? Between those two. It
would have been close because Arnold had things on Haney, and Haney had, I believe Haney had better symmetry. In other words, he had better muscle balance.
Yeah.
Arnold had much, much better arms. He had a wider back, and he was a bigger man, I have to say that Arnold at his best, and I would say to look at him in 1974. Do you remember when he won the 74 Olympia?
Sure.
I think that's when he beat Lou Ferrigno.
Yep.
He was at his best that year. I think it was the best year he ever had. Arnold, looking like that, I believe would have defeated Lee Haney, like that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Arnold in 1980, Lee Haney would have, even the 1990 Lee Haney, which was considerably off, would have defeated the 1980 Arnold.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I guess it depends also on the situation, but that's a really tough question because they were both really great. I mean, two of the greatest ever.
Yeah.
It's hard to say, Arnold, I don't know, to me, if you ask me who's the single greatest Mr. Olympia, my first answer would be Ronnie Coleman, because he was the freak of all freaks. No one ever matched his muscle size, and he dominated that show. I mean, talk about incumbents. For the years he held the title, it was only always for second place. It was kind of similar to Frail Heath for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a foregone conclusion when Ronnie stepped on the stage. Nobody came close to matching his mass. Nobody.
Yeah.
The only guy that came close was Flex Wheeler, But, I forgot my train of thought. What was it?
You're saying the most dominant Mr. Olympia.
Oh, the most dominant. I would say it was Ronnie Coleman because of that. But for overall greatness, maybe it's because he's done so much with his life. Maybe I'm throwing that into I would still have to say Arnold.
Yeah.
With the one in my book, you know. But Ronnie, if you talk about pure bodybuilding, it's Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah.
But overall greatness, probably Arnold.
But the standards have changed too so much, right, Jerry? I mean, back then, symmetry was considered important, aesthetics. I mean, when I look at pictures of Arnold, like there's a picture of him when he won the 1973 Mr. Olympia, and he's standing on stage with Joe Weider and his girlfriend at the time, Barbara Outland. And he's just standing there, and he looks so perfect. You know, his thighs, his arms, his chest, his waist. I mean, to me, that picture of how he looks at that show, that's the ultimate Mr. Olympia. Like, when I think of Mr. Olympia, I think of that, you know. So, I mean, Ronnie was obviously much bigger, but Ronnie lost the aesthetic appeal, I think. And then, you know, you could also look at Lee Haney, who I think, I agree with you. I think him and Arnold were, like, the top of the line when it comes to mass and symmetry and aesthetic appeal. But I think when you talk about the modern-day bodybuilder, they've lost that aesthetic appeal. That's why I always prefer to look at guys like from the 70s or 80s as the ultimate bodybuilders.
Well, yeah, you're right. You have to really look at that aspect of the bodybuilding, because in Arnold's day, as you correctly stated, there was an aesthetic portion of bodybuilding. In other words, you had everything in balance. Symmetry was very important. You know,
right.
I conditioned that, like I said earlier, when I judged the shows, symmetry and proportion were, to me, the two main ideals to look for in a bodybuilding. You know, I didn't care about big arms or big calves or big. You had to have it all in balance. That to me was the fucking body, and that's what was. That's
good judging too, and not too many judges judge like that anymore, unfortunately.
That's right. You're right. But today, there is some sort of like the aesthetics are not quite as significant, let's say, as they were back then.
Mm-hmm.
Which, and I think again, this plays a part in why Sean Roden also won this year.
Yeah.
Because I went up to him when he was training for this year's contest. I never met Sean Roden. Remember, I haven't written for the magazines in years, so I don't know the current guys. But I saw him training in the gym, and I went up to him and I introduced myself. And I said, you know, Sean, I got to tell you, I said, of all the pro bodybuilders, I admire your physique the most because you remind me of the days when I competed, you know, back in the 70s, when symmetry and proportion were king. I said, you have a symmetrical proportion physique that is aesthetically pleasing, even though you have a large amount of muscle size, right?
Yeah.
Now, he had just gotten off the treadmill when I had this conversation, and he looked at me and didn't say anything. He didn't say thank you. I did say one other thing. I said, Sean, this talk about forecasting. Sean, I'll be rooting for you in the Mr. Olympia. That was the last thing I said to him.
Uh-huh.
And he just kind of a slight smile on lips, not a real smile. He went like that, you know, just a little thing. And he turned and walked away. He didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, well, how do I make it? What do I think about this? I said, hey, did that just mean? I said, it's either he's like dieting really, because I, you know, having been a bodybuilder, I know brain gets when you're dieting.
Right.
He's dieting very strictly. He just got off doing 45 minutes of aerobics. I said, so the guy is, you know, not in a mood to talk.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's not take anything personal. He's probably also introverted.
Yeah.
So,
yes,
so that's the way I looked at it. But I mean, I meant it when I said that. I thought, so honestly, John, when he won, I wasn't. I was only mildly surprised, and the reason was I was mildly surprised was because I thought for sure, I really did. I thought that they would give it to Phil Heath.
Oh, I did too, all the way.
Honestly, I'm not a betting man, but I would have actually bet money on it.
Me too.
Especially since for two reasons. Also, because Sean Roden, you know, everybody was going by the way he looked the year before, where he was off. So they thought that, remember, the guy is, what, 42 years old?
Yeah.
They figured he'd be off again. So who's going to be, you know, who's going to beat Phil?
Yeah.
And the other thing was that the one guy who I thought actually could possibly beat Phil was not in the contest. You know who I'm talking about, right?
That's Kai Greene. Kai Greene. Yeah.
I'm glad you remembered his name because I... Kai Greene, I think the year that, you remember that year they competed again, their physiques were so close.
Yeah.
Kai Greene, actually did something that no one had done. He matched Phil Heath's back. He matched his back.
Yeah.
He even had wider lats.
Right, yeah.
That contest could have gone either way that night.
Yeah.
And Phil Heath was in good shape. He still had the belly, but he was in good shape.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Those two factors, the fact that Ty Green wasn't there and the fact that, Sean had been off the year before, I would have bet money that Phil Heath would win. I'm glad that I did, but it was a big surprise,
Yeah.
Although when I did watch it on the open the internet, and as the contest went on, I said to myself, son of a gun, Sean Roden's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking better and better with each minute that goes by.
Yeah, yeah.
And Phil is not looking as good as time went on,
Yeah.
I mean, so when they announced it, that's why I said I was only mildly surprised.
Yeah.
We'll see now, though, that the big challenge for Sean Roden is if he can hold, is he going to be a one, Remember the old thing about a one-hit wonder? These guys that
one made done, yeah. One-hit wonder.
Yeah, and then they disappeared.
Right.
Is he going to be like some of those other Mr. Olympians, like Chris Dickerson and Samir once and never won it again? Or is he going to? I mean, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but I write about science, and time is against Sean at 43 next year.
Yeah,
that's not an old man, but for bodybuilding. It's a little harder to get in that kind of shape year after year. So
yeah.
I know. So I guess this is a long-winded way of saying that this coming Mr. Olympia, to me, from my point of view, is going to be one of the most exciting and interesting.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's a completely open contest.
I agree. Yeah.
Sean, even though he is the incoming Mr. Olympia, because of the age factor and the other thing, I don't think he has an edge like Phil Heath. Like Lee Haney, like Arnold, like some of the guys. I don't think he has that kind of age.
No, I don't either. Yeah.
So I consider it a completely open contest.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of symmetry versus mass, also in 88, I just talked to Phil Williams.
Oh, and
yeah. Phil won his first and only pro show that year, which was the 1988 Chicago Pro Show in Chicago.
Which I was at.
Yeah, he told the story about how you helped him because he was cramping up so much from taking the Odactone.
Yeah, Bill Grant and I were hanging around with him. I was there for Weider. Jeff Everson was there too, I remember, mm-hmm. and he was having some problems. He was so dry and dehydrated.
Yeah.
He was cramping, so we took him to a restaurant, me and Grant, and I told him what to eat, got a little minerals in him, and of course he improved. And, Phil beat Gary Strigham in that show.
Right.
And Gary was tremendous bodybuilder.
Huge, yeah.
From the front, this guy was unbeatable,
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Gary, as great as he was the antithesis of Lee Haney and Samir Banu. Didn't have the back detail.
Right.
His lats weren't wide, didn't have any muscularity in his back. Phil had a back like Samir and Lee.
Yeah.
Phil, as actually beat Lee Haney when they were young guys.
Yeah, when they were teenagers, right.
Phil was a clear winner. A really great guy, it was an interesting show. Phil looked great. He looked great that year.
Yeah, he told me that he took L-Dactone, and he was also taking potassium with it.
Oh, yeah.
And he told you told him to take salt. Taking more sodium, yeah.
Exactly, because aldactone is what they call a potassium sparing diuretic.
Right.
So now when you take that, what that means is it holds potassium in the body, right? Now a normal amount of potassium is very important. It's important for nerve conduction, for your heartbeat, that.
Right.
However, a large amount of potassium is very dangerous. In fact, when they put people to death, when they give somebody the death penalty, the way they kill them is by injecting a needle in his heart. That's the last thing they do, of potassium chloride, enough to stop his heart.
Because
when you inject potassium directly in the heart, it has the same effect as a bullet going in the heart. Heart stops immediately.
Wow, okay. So
they do that on top of the other drugs. They do that. Well, I don't want to get into, cause death here, but the point is that Phil had done that. He had made the mistake. I saw another bodybuilder do that, too. I'll tell you that about in a second. So, yes, we brought up the restaurant. We had to take the salt, which was the cure, because the salt would drive the potassium out immediately. Also, I had to eat some carbohydrates, because an interesting fact, the listeners might want to know this, is carbohydrates, because they stimulate a rapid insulin release, also drive potassium out of the blood into the cells immediately, very fast. So that immediately cleared up. He was very, really very ill, Phil. I mean, the guy was so weak and messed up.
Yeah.
He didn't know whether he could even go back and post for the night show.
Right.
But with the salt and the carbs that he ate, boom, a half hour later, he was wide awake. He was fine. He went back, you know, didn't hurt him at all. Didn't hold any water.
Yeah.
He won the show. And I saw that happen to Mike Valarasso. Great guy, you know, late model, you know, unfortunately passed away.
Right.
One of the Arnold shows, you know, they used to have a bus that took you from the hotel to the Veterans Auditorium in Columbus, Ohio. I caught the bus to go to the pre-judge. There was only one of the guys in the bus. It was Mike Matarazzo, who I knew very well. I was good friends with him.
Uh-huh.
And I said, Mike, how you doing? Because he was competing that night. I said, Mike, how you doing? How do you feel? Are you ready for the show? He says, Jerry, I feel like death. I feel like I'm going to die. And he looked funny. He had a funny kind of gray skin. So I said, Mike, what the hell's going on? He said, I don't know. He says, I took some aldactone and I took a couple of grams of potassium. I said, what? You took a couple of grams of potassium with aldactone? He says, yeah, why? Is there a problem? I said, and I told him what I just told you. I said, yeah. Mike, you could die. I said, you know, are you feeling funny stuff in your chest? He says, yeah, I'm getting like heart palpitations. I said, oh my God, Mike. You know, but somehow we got to the auditorium. I don't know, I kind of like, he had to go somewhere and I lost track of him. He competed and was seen to be fine through the contest. I don't know whether he ate some salt. I did tell him to take some salt.
Uh-huh.
So probably did that because he competed. He seemed, you know, if you look at the video, he was fine in the video. I mean, he competed all right, but he's the only other guy that I think
he did go to the hospital that night from what I heard. I heard the story that he went to the hospital that night.
I think he probably did, you know, and, the only other guy at the Arnold show that had to go to the hospital was Paul Gallet.
Yeah, I remember that, when he cramped up on stage.
Paul was a great guy, good friend of mine. He used to, but he was very insecure before a contest. He would call all these so-called guys that he thought were experts,
mm-hmm.
10 of them. One of them was me, you know. Call them up and say, what should I do right before the contest? What should I take? And I tell him what to do, and then as soon as he got off the phone with me, he called two other guys. They tell him two other things to tell.
Right. So
Paul, unfortunately, listened to too many guys, wound up using too much of injectable Lasix, and when he got on stage, you remember he kind of stiffened up.
Yeah.
He went into rigor mortis, swollen. And they had to literally
carry him off stage.
Right. Such a big guy. Three guys had to carry him off the stage.
Right. So,
but I've seen a lot of, you know, a lot of things happen during contests over the years, and 99% of them, I'm talking about like medical emergencies or guys fainting or falling down while they're posing. I mean, things like that. Almost every case involved one or two items. Either they were dehydrated, not necessarily diuretics. But they stopped drinking water.
Right.
This is incredible. One guy had stopped drinking water. You won't believe this. Something like 4 or 5 days before the contest.
Jeez.
He's lucky he didn't die of kidney failure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I don't know how this guy was alive. But I'm trying not to laugh. This is not really funny. But I was interviewing him backstage, you know, and I just asked him a question about his back workout. He said, well, I started doing shit.
Wow.
He passed out on the curb.
Yeah.
And I immediately said, water. Bring this guy water.
Yeah.
You know, and we all circled around him. And he was okay after a couple of minutes, but it turns out this is the guy, he had not drank water. I said, what did you do, man? Did you take diuretics? He says, no, I didn't. I said, well, what's going on? He says, I cut the, aren't you supposed to cut the water out before? I said, not 5 days before. I said, you better get to a hospital. You could have kidney failure right now.
Yeah.
you know.
I saw a guy, I think it was in the late 70s, and it was just some amateur contest, and they had a whole lineup of guys, and they did a quarter turn to the right, and this one guy just, boom, collapsed. Because back then, I remember it was standard in the gym, like everybody getting ready for a show, we wouldn't drink water Thursday, Friday, or Saturday.
Yeah.
All three. I mean, everybody did that. Thursday, okay, Friday, Saturday. We wouldn't drink any water.
I saw a show once where, I can't remember his name, he's a big guy from New Jersey. You remember Tom Dieters was working for the magazine.
Yeah.
And Tom Dieters, we were in the press section, you know, and they were lined up on stage, and the posing platform was really high off the stage, like 15 feet up, and this guy was standing at the edge of the platform.
Yeah.
And he started to kind of go like this. He started to kind of go like this. So Dieters and I noticed it at the same time. I said, Tom, look at that guy at the end. Something's going on with that guy. He says, we better get back there. we better get back there real fast. So we ran backstage. This guy was really a big guy.
Yeah.
He was like, this guy really was about 240. He won a couple of shows. I can't remember his name. Nice guy. He was from New Jersey, I remember. We literally got him, John, right before he was going to fall off. He started to go. We grabbed him, both of us.
Wow.
And two other guys working backstage ran up and also caught him. We got him right when he was about, he would have cracked his skull,
backstage.
And we brought him backstage, and same thing, you know, this guy, in his case, it was diuretics. He was completely, the blood circulation to his brain was gone.
Right.
His blood volume had dropped so much that his brain wasn't getting blood perfusion and oxygen.
Right, right.
So the guy might as well have been standing at the top of Mount Everest instead of, you know, thank God, you know, we gave him some water. And right. Again, in minutes, the guy was fine. I mean, it's amazing how fast, you know. So, I mean, there's a couple of guys, I'm not trying to put a halo over my head, but there's quite a few guys over the years where I attended the contest where I was able to, like, you know, kind of step in before something serious happened where I was able to see them.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time it was diuretic use where, you know, you could see that they were in trouble. You know, I manage Flex Wheeler even says I saved his life. He wrote in his autobiography.
Hmm.
Arnold Show, he says I saved his life. I don't know if that's true or not, but the point is, all I can say is I was glad to be there.
Yeah.
So to prevent these guys from really getting messed up, you know?
Yeah.
And that's all I can say. You know, I'm not trying to say I'm some heroic character or something like that. Right. You know?
Hey, speaking of Phil Williams, if he would have – that contest was held 3 weeks before the Olympia, the 88 Olympia we just talked about. If he would have went in it in that condition that he won the Chicago Pro Show, how do you think he would have did?
I think he would have at least made the top five at least.
I agree.
You remember what the top five was? Because I can tell you more definitively.
Yeah, Haney was first. Gasparri was second. DeMay was third. Labrada was fourth. Stridham was fifth. And Mike Quinn was sixth.
Okay, I say that Phil would have got fifth. He would have beaten Stridham for sure.
He would have beaten Stridham, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Definitely for sure. He would have gotten fifth.
And he had beaten Labrada before a couple times in the USA and the Nationals, remember?
He might have even placed ahead of Labrada.
Yeah.
If he had gotten in that shape, for all I know, he might have placed as high as second.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have beaten Lee Haney.
No, I don't think so either.
He might have placed as high as second.
Yeah.
Because remember, you know, people forget Phil Williams had a perfect body. He had a very small looking waist. He had thigh sweep, thigh cuts, he had calves.
Yeah.
And his back was among the best in bodybuilding.
Yeah, yeah.
And remember, he also had great arm, better arms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he just wasn't the biggest guy. I mean, I remember when Phil tried to make a comeback years later at the Night of the Champions in New York, which I also covered. You know, Phil was a good friend of mine, of course, and he was just completely wiped out. I mean, he didn't even make the top 10, I remember him saying to me, he says, Jerry, I can't compete against these guys. You know, they're just big.
Right.
He says, I just can't get that big. You know, which saddened me, you know, because, again, my thing was always symmetry and proportion. And Phil was an ideal example of that.
Yeah.
And it was sad that a guy with such a great physique wasn't even in the running anymore.
I know.
Because of, giant bodybuilders.
The size had taken over.
Yeah, it's taken over. So a guy like him, a guy like Frank Zane, a guy like Lee Labrada, I mean, they today these guys would not even make the top 10.
Wouldn't get looked at. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, I mean, I have mixed feelings. I admire the muscle mass of the guys today.
Yeah.
You know, talking about the pros now, not the physique guys and the other guys, but
right.
But I kind of miss the days when, you know, when the physiques were more, let's say, not only sin of your abortion, but they were more attainable and where the public could relate to them.
Right.
They can't. That's why they have these physique divisions and men's physique and class, because they had to bring that back because nobody could relate to the pros. They're just too fucking big.
Right, right.
But you see, what bothers me from another point of view is that you got to, you know, people don't think about this, but when I see those guys, I say to myself, what did it take to get that kind of muscle size?
Yeah.
What are these guys doing to themselves? How much drugs are they taking to do? What's going to happen to these guys?
Yeah.
This is, you know, it's not so much the size. It's that if these guys try and, here's my point. If these guys try and get bigger and bigger and bigger, sooner or later the dam is going to break. You know, it's going to, you know, you're going to have guys dropping dead on stage. Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, there's got to be a point. And I'm not saying that drug testing is the answer, because Wayne was right about that. I mean, if you, let's face it, if you take the drugs away from these guys, Phil, he probably wouldn't even make the top 10 from all I know.
Right.
Because, you know, even though they call him the gift, or maybe I'm being a little bit hyperbolic there, because he's good enough to make, of course, he still plays pretty high. But the point is that you take away the drugs and you have a completely different looking physique.
Absolutely.
You still have, but here's the point, you'd still have, and this is what I argue with people who don't know anything about bodybuilding. Well, if it wasn't for these drugs, they say, these guys would look no different than guys on the street. I mean, what stupid statement that is.
Right.
What a stupid statement. I say to these guys, you think that these guys, these pros or whatever, even the classic bodybuilders, you think that without drugs they would look like they never touched a weight? You think their physiques are 100% drugs?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Listen to yourself.
Right.
Listen to how stupid you that is.
Right, right.
And they say, well, I know it's all drugs. That's why I walk away. All right, see you later. I'm not going to argue with that. It's kind of stupid mentality.
Right, that's great.
That's great. The truth of the matter, and I've said this about, I said I was a, you know, an average body. I didn't have great genetics myself. You have much better genetics than me and all that. But the point is that I could take the same drug program that Sean Roden or Phil Heath or Ronnie Coleman who's the guy, a good friend of mine, just Phil, Jay Cutler, any of these guys. I wouldn't look anything, or Arnold, forget it, I would, in fact, I saw guys use Arnold's program. I saw it back in the 60s. All the guys who trained, Arnold was very forthcoming. It wasn't like the guys today, where everything's secret. I'm not going to tell you.
Right.
Back then, he would tell them exactly what he used. He'd even give them his drugs. I was in Arnold's apartment when a bunch of guys lined up. I don't want to mention their names to embarrass them, but we've already talked about some of them. But some guys lined up, and Arnold, he had a pre-lumbar injection, the same one he used, and they dropped their pants, and he threw it in their butt like a dartboard. And I was sitting on the couch watching, and every time he did this, I said, oh my God. So like, one of the guys was my training partner at the time. Each guy was lined up and got the dartboard. But my point is that all of these guys, all the guys that trained with Arnold, they all use the same drugs.
Yeah.
And as you said earlier, they didn't use the drugs anything like the guys today. They got off the drugs after the show. But the point is, none of them responded to the drugs like Arnold. They never came close to looking like Arnold.
Yeah.
Other than Arnold, in those days, I'd say the guy who responded best to the drugs of all the guys was Danny Padilla. Danny Padilla, who had amazing, like I said, 30-day transformation from a little short guy who literally did look like he didn't train to a guy who was, to me, I don't know if you agree with this, one of the greatest short bodybuilders.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, I saw him in shape right in front of me, and again, no weakness, no weak points. The only thing wrong with Danny was that he wasn't tall.
Tall, yeah.
I really think that I have a category I call uncrowned Mr. Olympias.
Mm-hmm.
I there's several men I felt should have won. Like Flex Wheeler is one of them. Leah Brada is one of them. And Danny Padilla is definitely on that list. I think he should have won the Mr. Olympia. Because, you know, again, he it relates to my standards of perfect symmetry, perfect aesthetics.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, who wouldn't want to look like Danny Padilla?
Yeah.
And he wasn't overwhelmingly big where you'd say, ah!
Yeah.
Oh, my dog just jumped up on him. Nothing against you, but he just has a great looking physique, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the key. The guys years ago, I mean, you know, when they went to the beach, people, Frank Zane, even Arnold, people weren't freaked out over their they were just, I mean, they were amazed because you have to understand, we're talking the 60s and 70s. Bodybuilders were as rare as pink flamingos. You know,
yeah.
You just, I mean, you know, most people had no physiques, literally. You know,
yeah.
So when they'd see a guy like Arnold walk down the beach, it was almost like this. I mean, the looks on their face, it was almost as if a UFO had landed right there in the sand.
Right.
I mean, what the hell is this? You know, I mean, you know.
But you're saying because they were so aesthetically pleasing, they weren't like people were freaked out about them. You know, I mean, they were freaked out, but not grossed out by them.
Exactly, and you can see the look on the face of both men and women when they would look at Arnold. It wasn't like ah,
yeah.
You know, they lived like, wow, look at this guy. How did he get like that? You know, the guys that could read their minds, they'd say, wow, why can't I look like that?
Yeah,
you know, it was admiration, John. It wasn't disgust.
Yeah,
like people today look at Phil Heath, maybe not Sean Roden, because he, you know, but some of the other guys. They find it repulsive.
Yeah, I did an interview with John Torelli from Australia, and John had a really great symmetrical physique. You know, nice. And then he said, toward the end of his career, but before he retired, he went into the NAB of Mr. Universe. He was done with the IFBB. He went over to the NAB of Mr. Universe, and he got bigger than ever. You know, I don't know if it was from the training he was doing or if he was doing different drugs or whatever. And he said as he was getting ready for the contest, he went to the beach and these two young girls walked by him. He was like by a concession stand to buy some food or something. And they walked by and they looked at him and they go, ugh, gross. Now, years ago, he would have gotten, you know, the, oh, wow, look how hot he is, you know. But now he had gotten so big that, you know, it was just like, ugh.
Yeah. See, there seems to be a point at which people just don't relate to it.
Yeah.
In other words, it's almost like the bodybuilder is not human anymore.
Yeah.
He becomes literally a monster. You know, we use that expression of bodybuilder, you know, for years.
That's a compliment.
He's a monster. You know, we're not comparing him to Frankenstein. We're saying that he's monstrously big.
Right.
But to these people, he is, you know, the big guys with all the veins, you know. I remember Paul Dillette had a big problem with that. When Paul and I would walk around, sometimes he'd walk around in a tank top. You know how big Paul was?
Yeah.
And he had big veins sticking all over his cheek.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Almost looked like varicose veins, I have to admit.
Right.
You know? And I remember going in the supermarket once, and I saw a couple of women. They didn't say anything, but Paul didn't see this. I saw it. They looked at him. They kind of went like this. You know, but the vomit, you know.
Right.
I didn't want. Paul was a sensitive guy. I didn't want to hurt his feelings, you know. So I didn't say anything. But I'm thinking, they think he's disgusting. I said to myself,
right.
It's one of the top five pro bodybuilders in the world, and they think, and they would go for a skinny guy weighing 160 pounds, who had abs over Paul.
Absolutely,
all that Paul did, all the steroids he took, everything. And, you know, not that that's the most important thing in the world. Who cares what they think anyway, right?
Yeah.
But it's just kind of funny. But, you know, I guess the whole point I'm trying to make about this is that, I mean, we're talking about, you know, the contest years ago. I think that, you know, this type of look was better for both health reasons and for the popularity. bodybuilding, let's face it, I mean, it's never going to be, and John Baylock used to talk about this, you know, the publisher of Iron Man, it's never going to be a mainstream sport like football, baseball, because there's a number of reasons. Because it, first of all, it requires more effort. Second of all, people can't relate to it. And most importantly of all, people aren't willing, when they find out what it takes to be any kind of bodybuilder, going into the gym, sweating every day, you know, going through, being religious about your workouts and your diet, it's not popular. People don't have that kind of drive to do that. Right. So it'll never be popular. But however, it can be more appealing, in my opinion, if, you know, if the physiques were scaled back a little bit.
Yeah.
And this is, to underscore what I'm saying, again, I've only heard this. I don't know if this is a fact. But what I was told is that these new divisions, these like the classic physique and the men's physique, you know, where they wear the board shorts.
Yeah.
Is becoming extremely popular.
Yeah.
I've heard sometimes some of these contests, like 300 guys show up.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I mean, bodybuilding was practically dying.
Right.
You get, like, guys showing up before. Now, all these guys, because they say, okay, I can't be as big as the pros, but, man, I can get abs.
Yeah.
I can get some muscle definition, maybe bring my delts out.
Yeah.
And hell, if I compete in men's physique, I don't even have to train my thighs.
Right.
What's better than that?
Right, right. Exactly.
So I think it's a great trend. I mean, but, again, it's bodybuilding is getting more popular because of that.
Yeah, yeah, the competitions are getting bigger and bigger.
But what else can I say? Anything you want to ask me about the contest, John?
No, I think that's good. I think we covered... Just thanks for going down memory lane with me and covering 1968, 78, and 88. I think it was more exciting to talk about that than it was to talk about 2018.
Yeah, much more. And let me tell you, I think it was an old saying, and I think Gloria Swanson said this in that movie Sunset Boulevard.
Oh yeah.
There's a line in the movie where she says the stars had faces back then. In other words, what she was saying was that, and there's another line that was great, when somebody says to her, "Hey, aren't you so-and-so? You used to be really big in the movies, weren't you?"
Yeah.
And she responds by saying, "I'm still big."
Yeah.
Like, "Whoa, that's small."
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Anyway, my point is that, you know, to paraphrase that, you could say that back then, the physiques were different. In other words, they were better looking.
Yeah.
And they could differentiate. All the bodies didn't look the same.
Yeah.
You know, you had a Frank Zane, you had an Arnold. You know, it was more aesthetic. You know, it was just more appealing to people.
Yeah,
you know
what absolutely. I'm saying? Yeah.
Honestly, if I was a kid just starting out, I think you probably started very young too.
Yeah.
If I was 12 years old again, as I was when I started lifting weights, if the bodybuilders back then looked like they, in the pros, looked like they did today, I started, I was a swimmer before I became a bodybuilder. I started training in a weight gym that was near the pool where I practiced my swimming.
Uh-huh.
If I saw if I walked in a weight room and contemplated starting to lift weights, and somebody handed me a magazine, and the guy's picture would look like they do today, I would have put down the magazine, stepped out of the gym, and went right back into the pool.
Yeah, right, right, exactly.
Would have began lifting weights,
right,
you know?
Right.
So I'm just one person, but I think a lot of people probably.
Oh yeah. Well, we didn't even talk about how exciting the audiences were then too. Remember?
You were at
some of those classic shows at Brooklyn Academy of Music in the '60s, and I was at the Olympia in the '70s, the late '70s, the one that Zane won. And then you were at that one in 88. I mean, the crowds were just insane, you know.
Very enthusiastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't been to a pro, large show. I haven't been to Arnold or Olympia in a while. But I don't get the feeling that it's the same type of enthusiasm that we had back. Every contest, the crowd was so into it. I mean, they were screaming. We talked about how Larry Scott got literally a 20-minute standing ovation. Screaming. 1966.
Yeah.
Screaming and yelling at the top of their lungs. I was one of them. Lou Ferrigno was, you know, yelling for this guy. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I competed in a contest in a place called Mount Holyoke.
Yeah.
With my good friend, what's his name? You know him, the guy
at Jubinville.
No, Jubinville's protege. Damn, I'm bad on names today.
Dave Masarakis.
Hey, Dave, yeah, good friend of mine. Dave, great, great guy. We competed in a show there. Dave was from that area, and Jubinville was his mentor. But I remember it was just a small crowd. It was an amusement park.
Yeah.
But people were screaming and yelling, too. Yeah. They were standing up. It made you, like, feel good. You know what I'm saying? It got so I beat Ron Coots, who went on to win the USA.
Yeah.
I won the Teenage Southern California at a police academy here in Los Angeles. When I was 19 years old, I won the Junior Southern California. I beat him. And again, small auditorium, half of them were cops, for crying out loud. And they were on there, time I did my Arnold chest pose, they were all standing, hey, kid, hey, you're great. And they're yelling. Yeah. I mean, I remember feeling so great, you know?
Yeah.
I could have had become a narcissist because of that.
Right, right.
Some people think I am.
Anyway. Yeah, I remember being at the 77 Olympia that Zane won the first time, and I was 14 years old, and I the whole night show, I was standing up, clapping and screaming. My voice was hoarse the next day. I mean, you don't see that kind of adulation for these competitors anymore.
Don't feel alone. I did the same thing when I was that age. I was just like you. I remember, like I told you, I used to, luckily, at the Brooklyn Academy, I'd actually get backstage.
Yeah, that's amazing.
All the bodybuilders and asking for autographs.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So what the hell is an autograph? You know, I was 14 years old.
Right.
And, the thing, other than Sergio Oliva, the thing I always remember is how nice the guys were. Don Horth, a guy named Gabe Boudreaux.
Yeah.
They were just such nice guys, They'd say, what do you want me to write, kid? They'd write it down.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a very good impression of bodybuilders as men, as human beings.
Yeah.
From that little interaction I had, I said, these people are decent people. They're nice to a kid who they don't even know.
Yeah.
Except Virgil, forgive him,
Yeah.
May he rest in peace, as they say,
Right. Yeah, those were the days, as they say, right, Jer?
Yeah, John. You're right.
Well, Jerry, I want to thank you for joining us. You spent a lot of time talking about the old days, so I appreciate it. And it's always great to hear your stories. And it's great to talk to you again. And I want to wish you a happy new year for 2019.
Absolutely. I hope you have a great and healthy new year yourself, too. And keep up this great work. I always look forward to your videos about the great bodybuilders of the past.
And yeah,
to me, it is literally a stroll down memory lane.
Exactly.
I sit there, if you saw me watching, I got this big smile on my face the whole
time.
Right. It's great.
That's great to hear.
Keep up the great work.
All right, I will. All right, buddy. All right, thanks again, Jerry. Thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Take care, John. Bye-bye.
All right, Jerry. Take care.
All right, thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, of course, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs. And as promised, I'm going to read you guys an article, and this comes from May 1974, Muscle Builder Magazine, which was volume 15, number 2, and it's about the 1973 Mr. Olympia, Mr. World, Mr. America contest. And this is a very interesting contest because this was the contest that was covered not only in the magazines, but also by George Butler and Charles Gaines for their book, Pumping Iron. So it was a very significant contest. They didn't realize it at the time that it was going to be covered in Pumping Iron. But this also set the stage for the movie Pumping Iron, which came out 2 years later. And what's interesting about this article is it's written by Joe Weider, and he doesn't hold back in his opinion of Sergio Oliva. Now, you have to remember the year before, Sergio was beaten by Arnold in Essen, Germany, and he took that loss very hard. And the next year, in 1973, Sergio competed in Tijuana, Mexico, in the IFBB Mr. International contest, and Joe Weider and Arnold were there, and Sergio challenged Arnold to come up on stage and pose down with him because he believed that the result would be more fair. And he thought that Weider was stacking the other contests with his judges, so Sergio never had a chance to win against Arnold. So listen to this article, and you'll hear Joe give his unbiased opinion about what he thinks about Sergio Oliva. So the title of the article says, Sergio chickens out as Arnold cops Mr. Olympia honors for a record fourth time. Colombo and Nubre add to the best ever Mr. O contest. Ken Waller is an easy Mr. World victor, and new superstar Lou Ferrigno is an easy AABA Mr. America. Like a pack of lusting sharks sensing blood, over 3,000 Muscle fans stormed the Brooklyn Academy of Music on September 8, 1973, to gorge themselves on the greatest bodybuilding show ever held. 2,000 couldn't get in, but refused to leave, and even police reinforcements failed to remove them from the streets until the last light was out and the final contestant had left. The Monster Muscle Show outdraws the rival contest 3-1. At the same time, another muscle show was being held a few subway stations away in a Manhattan college auditorium. Although it had some name entrants and was selling through the widespread Ticketron outlets, orders were lagging until the legendary Steve Reeves, in New York on business, remarked on TV that he would attend. Reeves' appearance, dressed, ensured that a crowd for the rival show. Yet there were more bodybuilders milling about on Lafayette Street and St. Felix Place outside the Brooklyn Academy who chose not to go to Manhattan than inside the college hall. In the only known instance of contest and competition, the IFBB AABA contest won by several thousand muscle supporters. Now, I should mention here that the other contest that Joe is talking about was Dan Lurie's contest, which I believe he called the Mr. Olympus. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Sergio competed in that contest instead of the Mr. Olympia. And in order to get more of a crowd, as the article states, they had Steve Reeves show up and hand out the trophy. And then the article continues, New York's authoritative weekly, The Village Voice, blasted the other show, ridiculing its presentation and content, but Voice columnist Howard Smith wrote agreeably about the IFBB event, calling it, quote, rather enjoyable, unquote, and, quote, more like a sporting event than a beauty contest, unquote. Bodybuilding may be on the Olympic calendar. Traditionally, Ben Weider opened the evening with a fiery speech detailing how very close we are to Olympic recognition. With Ben, a sports power in Canada and Montreal, hosting the next games, the IFBB may get Olympic permission by 1976. Yet even as he spoke these encouraging words, the audience wreathed restlessly. They had come to see, hear, eat, and breathe muscle, and muscle it was about to get. With Lon at the organ playing Mr. Wonderful, and Jimmy Caruso and Artie Zeller at stage center snapping their fabulous muscle pics, the curtain flashed up to reveal the most super mind-blowing collection of bodies ever placed on one physique contest stage. Quickly it dropped to keep the awed crowd in a gimme-more state of anxiety, and then the posing began. Mr. America highlights, giant newcomer wins. Two new faces ascended to national prominence in this bitterly fought contest of muscular marvels. Sensational Californian Bob Birdsong, another marvel from Gold's Venice, California gym, narrowly captured the medium class over veteran Franklin Green. Green showed fantastic abs and an inspired posing routine, but Birdsong's muscle-dense physique, chiseled legs, and good look supplied a 1.09 edge. Leanne Brown handily took first place in the short class, the eight other entrants well behind. He was overall most muscular and copped the best back trophy, too. Now, I should say here also that if you saw the book Pumping Iron, you'll remember those three amazing pictures of Leon Brown's back that were that took up two pages in the book. So it's interesting that he won best back at that contest. And this was the contest that those pictures were taken at. The article continues, but not surprisingly, all the excitement centered around the big boys. 6'5", 260-pound Louis Ferrigno made his American introduction in a fittingly Herculean way, smashing through all opposition, including another 6'1" giant, Bill Howard, to win the class, best arms, and best chest titles. Then, towering over Birdsong and Brown, he acquired the enormous IFBB Mr. America trophy. Ferrigno, only 21, is the tallest and heaviest Mr. America ever. Joe Weider personally thinks he is the heir apparent to Mr. Olympia Arnold Schwarzenegger, the only man naturally big enough to knock off Arnold. A little deficient in cuts and not a top poser, Ferrigno needs considerable additional training before he can mount a serious challenge, but the potential is there, and the howling throng at this fantastic contest loved him. Mr. World highlights, much improved Ken Waller wins. Intermission, variety acts, even the Miss Americana show seemed to irk the spectators this year. All they wanted to see was an ocean of muscle. And when the canvas parted for the Mr. World Spectacular, the magnificent century-old building jumped alive. In close competition, Johnny Maldonado edged Frank Barangay, Bill Mitchell, and 42-year-old Elliot Gilchrist to conquer the short men and get into the final round. En route, he won the Best Chess Trophy. Last year's out-of-the-blue sensation, Ed Corney, narrowly decisioned Steve Burnett for medium-class honors. His margin, 19/100th of a point, was the roughest height-class struggle of the evening. But, once again, out came the big men, and with them, Corney and Maldonado's hopes were destroyed. Ken Waller, bigger than life, with indescribable arms and back that engulfed the entire posing platform, fought it out with Mr. America, Mr. Universe, Dennis Tinerino, and fast-improving Bill Grant. The mob bellows for their favorites, and the local here, Tinerino, got plenty of cheers. Yet, all had to admit, it was Waller by a wallop, with absolutely deafening cheers. He was the only four-trophy victor of the night, winning Mr. World, Best Arms, Best Back, and Best Poser. Tinerino gleaned Best Legs. Grant, definitely a future force, was consoled with Most Muscular and Best Abdominals. Arnold confounds his Mr. Olympia critics. The muscle-dazed audience had hardly a moment to relax before bodybuilding's top contest, Mr. Olympia, was upon them. Much to the relief of IFBB officials expecting mayhem, Sergio Oliva had defected to guest star at the other show, and he wasn't even missed. Another superstar, rarely seen in America, Serge Noubre, more than compensated for the absence of chicken-hearted Oliva. Not since the incredible Larry Scott-Harold Poole showdowns of the mid-60s had the fans been treated to such an Olympian Olympia. Noubre, whose 1972 comeback at Munich was cheered by all in muscledom, posed first and was brilliant. The longtime hero had Schwarzenegger and Colombo worried as he scored near-perfect marks with the judges. Viva la Serge, yelled his French-speaking fans as he rolled from one breathtaking muscle display to the next. Only the super greatness of the two other contestants subverted Noubre's life dream of an Olympia medal. Joe Weider claims Serge clearly is an odds-on favorite to display Arnold in 74 if he would come to California and train. Noubre's life dream of winning the Olympia title. Serge Noubre has certain weaknesses, hardly noticeable in mortal company, but alongside Arnold and Franco, one must be a god. Franco Colombo has no muscle gaps that human vision can detect. Every inch of his physique burned with muscle on muscle. In terms of pure muscularity, he is the greatest show on earth. He has more than anyone. Unfortunately, his small stature compares unfavorably with taller stars. But this night, Franco, in his absolutely greatest shape, made the crowd literally go berserk. Over 3,000 mouths screamed. Programs were thrown to the stage, and anxious guards rushed to protect him against an onrush of crazed Franco worshippers. He held the audience captive for 10 minutes, and when he left, the knocked-out fans knew that no better short-class man exists. Now it was Arnold Schwarzenegger's moment in the spotlight. The man they said couldn't do it, the man who couldn't come back, the man whose injured leg had ruined his training career, the crumpled Apollo whose dethroning was a certainty, according to Sergio Oliva and Ricky Wayne. Well, here was the mighty oak, Arnold, bigger and better than ever, throwing a 22-inch plus biceps and a 57-inch chest right in their stunned faces and then telling them to back off. There would be no other Mr. Olympia this night. Arnold was Super Arnold, September 8, 1973. Greater than when he beat Sergio in years gone by, and God Almighty, the best built of the 50 billion men who have trod the earth since time began. Arnold has endured the doubts of his friends and the malevolence of his competitors. He came back from a wrecked knee to train harder than ever. As the truest of the true Weider champions, Arnold was unstoppable. Everyone in the hall knew it, and even Franco and Serge gaped at him, entranced. There is only one Mr. Olympia. There is only one Arnold, and they are one and the same. Mocking boos echoed mercilessly when Sergio Oliva's non-appearance was announced. In order to match Arnold and Sergio, to satisfy IFBB fans yearning to know who is truly the greatest, I had offered Oliva a $1,800 bonus to appear. The proposal was made during Tijuana's Mr. International contest. Sergio could make more losing than Arnold winning, $1,000 first prize, and would total $2,800 for beating Schwarzenegger. But apparently Oliva was scared to taste defeat again. He forfeited, at least a year, any right to call himself the world's best-built man. On to the universe. And so the great spectacle ended. Tom Miniacello's superb direction had crafted an unforgettable experience for the lucky ticket holders. As this is being written, Louis Ferrigno and Ken Waller are readying for their trip to Geneva, Switzerland. Mike Katz will also go as the trio vies for individual and team honors in the Mr. Universe contest. Their expenses are being paid by the AABA. In September, these and other greats will return to the 1974 Mr. America, Mr. World, and Mr. Olympia events. And once again, if you can't be there in person, Muscle Builder will bring you all the action in these pages. All right, so that was a great article written by Joe Weider about the 1973 Mr. Olympia, Mr. America, and Mr. World contest. And obviously there's a lot of history there. A young Lou Ferrigno coming in, Ken Waller winning the Mr. World, Arnold coming back from that knee injury that he suffered in 1972 to win the 1973 Olympia in his greatest shape up to that point. And also this again was a contest that was covered in the book Pumping Iron. So what a great trip down memory lane that was. All right, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And thanks again to our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. And thank you again to Jerry Branum for that series of interviews about 1968, 1978, and 1988. I really enjoyed it, and I hope to have Jerry back again sometime soon because he's such a great, entertaining guest. Next week, we will be joined by bodybuilder Pat Nevy, who was one of the best bodybuilders in the 1970s. So join us then for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Be sure to like us on YouTube and make a comment on our iTunes page if you get a chance, and we will see you guys next week. Take care.